any fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who's gonna win that itch. Yeah.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
Dan Buffa is a tenacious South City native who spews hot takes on KSDK News and St. Louis Game Time 24/7.
You gotta look at the guy next to you. Look into his eyes. Now I think you're gonna see a guy who will go that inch with you.
His producer is Matt Reloaded Davis, who loves the Blues and pushes all the right buttons. They're here to wake you up and tell you how it is.
Excuse me, bro, but who the f*** are you? I'm the one telling you how it is.
This is the Daybreak Dose on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning, St. Louis. Monday to the Southwest Diner Daybreak Dose, 105.7 HD2 FM, or stream it live on InsideSTL.com, on the all-new 590 The Fan app, the application available on Android or Apple, whichever you have. You can find us there wherever you are, in or out of a car, running around on an early morning run through this cold Monday as the frost was covering the cars this morning. You can get us anywhere. Comes in nice and clean on the 590 The Fan app, available on your phone and in whatever store that is on your phone. You can find it, download it, easy to use. It does work. And, another good week of shows here is December. It's already developing. December 5th, folks. Cannot believe that we are just about, 2 weeks, 3 weeks away from Christmas. 20 days away as Sunday rolled around yesterday. I just kind of said to my wife, well, we are 3 weeks away from good old jolly Christmas. St. Nick going to be flown into the chimneys here in about 3 weeks. But, a good week for me. Did a lot of stuff with the family. There's always just the laziness that comes with the weekend, because I know for me, I move around so much during the week, doing this show and writing for KSTK and, wrestling a five-year-old and, doing like the Mr. Mom stuff, like, wonderful, exhilarating stuff like laundry. And the other ridiculous action-adventure activity that I do, which is called dishes, which, I don't know about you, Reloaded, but my dishwasher gets emptied at least twice a day, because if you cook two meals, that's essentially two dishwasher loads for me. It's a drag.
Because I don't use a dishwasher.
Oh, you're old school.
I have one. I just don't use it.
I like it.
It's not good enough.
It's not.
I need my dishes clean. I don't want to have to wait around and wash them twice
You have a crappy dishwasher.
You know what? That seems to be my curse. Everywhere I've ever been, the dishwasher doesn't get the job done. Maybe I'm just a super stickler for how I want my dishes cleaned. I don't want any residues on there.
A little extra shine on there. Yeah. Mine works, but I do have to kind of clear the plate. I can't put it in there with a bunch of stuff on it.
Yeah.
But, back in the day when my wife and I were in apartments like in Columbia and Florissant and St. Louis, we had to do the old hand wash. We didn't have a dishwasher.
Yeah.
So now it's like I get to put them in there and go, I get to wash my dishes there.
There you go.
But I do feel like with some pots and pans, you do have to give it the old hand rinse.
Yeah.
Because it's just not going to do the trick. Like, my wife just bought fresh pots and pans and she gives me the old, we got a hand wash hose. I'm like, I know. And then until you forget about needing a hand wash and I'll put them in there, you won't even know about it.
Oh, no.
But, normal weekend at the Buffas, it's wonderful these days to look out my window and see that I don't have to mow the lawn anymore.
Yay.
The grass is dead. It's dead. I mean, I go out there and go, ha ha, you're dead. No more mowing you. The mower's been locked up for the winter. And then I look at my poor neighbor's house and she tried to not mow it for the last 2 months. And it's got the high patch of green over the brown.
It's nice.
It's like, I almost want to go over there and just do it. But then she wouldn't let me do it. She'd go, no, Dan, she wouldn't let me do it.
Getting a head start on next season, I guess.
Yeah. It's just got like an old patch of green. It's like the green wants to die, but it's just above the dead grass. But, that's winter for you. It's kicked in. No more mowing the lawn. You look out and the grass kind of has that crystallized form to it. There's the ice on the car and the morning. The Christmas decorations are up at the Buffa household. We have a little, you know, we have more of a subtle outdoor light thing with just like the railing and a little bit of the front part of the house. My wife put up a shack sized tree in the living room. It's just huge. It's fake, but it's huge. And it's like she pulled this out of like a what looks like the Undertaker's bag that he drags to the ring. And puts up this big tree so that's in our living room. But it is officially, it's just that time of year. And it's also that time of year where on Sundays when the wife's off and we're all home, we watch holiday films. And yesterday we watched Scrooged.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorites. Top three.
And really, you know, when I keep looking about it, I talk about Family Man being kind of a reloaded version of It's a Wonderful Life. It's got a little Scrooge to it too, because he was kind of an executive. He was kind of like a prick, not a nice guy, and kind of has to. He sees what the. I mean, obviously, Nick Cage doesn't get visited by any Ghosts of Christmas Past or any crazy cab drivers,
right?
But it's got some flavors of that. But man, Bill Murray back in the day, I think that was in the 80s. Was that made?
Oh, I almost probably. Say, if you I know, had to guess.
Some good stuff, man. I mean, I didn't see. I mean, Rachel, you know, we're going to watch Love Actually, which is probably one of our favorite movies. Richard Curtis, you know, Hugh Grant, good stuff.
1988 on Scrooged.
1988, man. Oh, man. Back in, I'm surprised we didn't catch Stallone in there, because he was in every other movie in 1988. But, you know, good movie. I mean, she said she's going to put on Love Actually, and then she starts, and I'm like, this is not Love Actually. And then she just kind of gives me that little mischievous smile, and it's like, it's Scrooge, man. I haven't watched this movie in 10 years.
Trickster.
I know. It's what she does. She's like, well, you know, the kid's there, and my wife and I don't want to watch Rescue Bots for the 50th time. We want to watch something that all three of us can appreciate. And it is like December, so you got to start watching the Christmas movies. My mom's going to have Christmas Story on like a constant stream on Christmas Day at her house. She loves it, man. And, I've already, you know, it's crazy. We talked about Family Man. What was it? Thursday, I think we were going
on. I think it was Thursday.
The first. And guess what was on later in the day?
Family Man.
I was like,
that's how it goes.
And I sit down and I'm like, this is just starting. This can't be real. And I watch the movie. I'm like, this is cool.
It's called synchronicity, Dan.
I know, man. It's like the universe is listening to me. Oh, yeah, you like the movie? We're going to put it on later on Stars.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Whenever I say, oh, boy, I just think of George Carlin. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. But, yeah, I mean, yesterday I watched Scrooge, man. You know, and whenever you watch movies from the 80s, they have that 80s production to them.
Yeah.
It's just kind of funny. But, you know.
I love that movie, Dan. I'm glad you brought it up.
It is.
I love it. I love Bill Murray.
You know, Bill Murray doesn't work enough anymore.
No.
You know, there's a reason that Wesley Snipes and Nick Cage don't work enough anymore, because it's called tax evasion. But, you know.
Whoa.
Bill Murray, of course, a celebrated, now really celebrated Cub fan, as he was showing in all the celebrations. But, you know, he doesn't work a lot anymore. I mean, he did a movie called St. Vincent a couple years ago where he kind of played this older kind of like this older haggard.
Curmudgeon.
Yeah, curmudgeon.
Yeah.
Who kind of takes a young man under his aid and kind of nurtures him in the fine ways of being mean.
And in turn, the kid also nurtured him.
I know. And really taught him how to mow dirt, which is one of the best parts of that movie.
Interesting. I forget that part.
He's having his kid mow his back lawn, which is essentially there's no grass. It's dyed. It's like, and then Melissa McCarthy, who I'm not the biggest fan of, she goes, nope. what are you doing with my kid? He's mowing dirt. It's like, well, he's finding out the way of living. You work.
Work ethic.
You work, you make money, and you drink. That's it.
That's it. That's all there is to life.
But yeah, other than that movie, you know, he hasn't really done a lot. I mean, he had a little cameo in Aloha, this Bradley Cooper, Emma Stone movie, but he hasn't really done a lot.
How long ago was Monuments Men?
Monuments Men was 3 years ago.
Okay.
Because that was a movie that, you know, it had a lot of big, a lot of hoopla, as I call it, surrounding.
A lot of star power.
A lot of star power, but critics just kind of dismissed it. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I didn't think it was bad.
I thought it was a good little Clooney film. You know, you got all of his buddies together. But, you know, it doesn't work a lot. And Bill Murray, it was nice to see him back in his heyday. Because back in the 80s, Bill Murray also worked a lot when he was back there, you know, doing, you know, films like Stripes.
Mm-hmm.
You had, I mean, you know, of course, Groundhog Day was in the early 90s.
Yep. What About Bob? One of my all-time favorite movies.
What About Bob? Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah, I watched that about four times now since it's been out on Netflix. My kids love that movie, too. I'm so proud.
It's funny because I just love where he's eating the food and he goes, how's the chicken, Bob? Richard Dreyfuss. But, you know, good stuff there. But we got a good show today. There's a lot of stuff to get to here. Matt Holliday has officially signed with the Yankees. He signed a one-year contract yesterday, $13 million.
Yeah.
I'm going to go over the box office. We'll talk a little bit more about the movies and what's going on. Big day in the NFL yesterday as Brady did his job, smacked around the Rams for us. There was a contract extension out west in L.A. that's kind of laughable.
Heard about that.
Yeah, it's comedic if you ask me. We'll recap that Blues-Jets game that was just kind of not really
It was an uphill climb.
Not a bad game, but it really just showed the Blues' lack of physicality this year because the Jets kind of had their way with them.
It also showed their tendency for mental lapses as well, I believe.
Yeah, a lot of mental lapses.
Especially Shattenkirk on the first Patrick Laine goal, and then Alex Steen in overtime forgot it was 3-on-3 and left his post all abandoned and all that.
He did, man.
Whoops.
And that's the thing about 3-on-3, and when I'll break it down later for you, but I said right after the game, that's 3-on-3, though, man. It can go the other way. Like, it's cool when it's your team in, like, the offensive zone, but when the other team goes that way, and Patrick Laine, who's probably one of the best young players in the NHL, he's got 16 goals now.
Yeah.
And really, he really perfected that moment really just right because he got, you know, the defender to go down and then he made a nice pass and it was just over. And really, that goal, that was a narrow angle.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it almost went off the post.
That was almost on the side, right.
I was like, please hit that post. And it was like, no, these are NHL players. Yeah. They're professionals.
Brian Little did it, though. He put it right in there.
He did, man. Mm. It was one of those things where it happened so fast. It happened less than 30 seconds.
It was 17 seconds into overtime.
17 seconds. Because I think it went in the blue zone and then Steen went in too far and then I guess he lost. His guy.
Yeah. Well, Winnipeg won the draw, I believe, and, you know, kind of backpedaled into their zone, and then Steen forechecked a little too hard, I guess, was caught up ice, and then I forget who it was, maybe Bufflin, that sprung
Bufflin.
Him. Yeah, I think he sprung Patrick Laine down the line, and then, yeah.
Bufflin, I mean, he plays Petro minutes, man, because I think for one sequence, he was out there for like 2 minutes.
He's a very good player.
Yeah, and I tell you what, speaking of Bufflin, he was the guy that I was kind of campaigning for the Blues to trade for last year before he signed the extension with Winnipeg. I was like, you know, that guy, you know, he plays, you know, he used to be a winger, right? And he still plays like a winger. He's a big dude. He seems like
he's a Brent Burns clone, sort of. Bigger.
He looks like he's 6'9" out there, and he weighs a ton. As you told me, because him and Reese were having words all game, and especially after he gave poor Tarasenko just a little bit of a shoulder and knocked down Tarasenko. I was like, oh, and Reese is going to talk to him. And he did. He went over to kind of bump him in the chest and said, you may not do it again. But
that dude would have swallowed Reeves up, Dan.
I don't know. I think Reeves is a skilled fighter. I think
I do too, but so is Bufflin, and Bufflin's got, you know, like a half man size on top of Reeves.
They could have given Reeves a ladder. I mean, you never know. It could have hit him with a ladder.
He needed a ladder.
260 pounds and you know, big number 33 out there. He really knows how to play. I mean, he assisted on that game winning goal, and it wasn't a hard pass. It was kind of like a saucer pass, and he gave Delaney up the wing.
Yep.
I mean, I
it was
watched
just a good old standard breakout pass.
I watched it on a replay. I think, you know, if he shoots a hard pass up the ice, you know, Laine probably misses it, but he just kind of tossed it over a couple sticks and put it right on there. I was like, man,
he recognized what was happening. He didn't have to force it or throw a hard puck down the ice. He realized, well, I got Steen caught up ice. I just got to make sure I get the puck to this guy, and we'll be good. So that's what he did. He took his time. He put a pass right on the tape where he needed it.
He really did. I mean, and I knew it too. I knew if Laine had that puck going into that zone, it was going to be problems for the Blues, and it was. And you know,
I almost tweeted out at the start of overtime, does anybody think Patrick Laine is not going to score here in overtime? Which that's who I have my money on scoring, but he assisted.
And it's funny because he had gotten a lot of his goals at home. He wasn't a good road scorer,
right?
And really, but then right away when he had that little break in and he just lost the handle of the puck at the end, right in front of Carter Hutton, I was like, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah, he's scary good, man. He was impressive. I enjoyed watching him, even in the loss, I enjoyed watching him a lot. Well,
yeah, because there's certain players. Like, for me, my guy that I like to watch is Ovechkin. Whenever he gets on the ice, I just look at number 8 because I know he's eventually going to get that puck. I just think he's fun to watch. And Sidney Crosby's another guy that I like to watch because he's just kind of a playmaker. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I didn't hate Petr Kane's guts, I'd probably like to watch him play too. But there are other players in this league that are just fun to watch. And I think even back in the day, like Pavel Bure was another guy I used to like to watch
as a kid. I think everyone did. He was superstar.
So short, but he was so fast. And he had a lightning quick shot. He was a fast skater. Like, man, that guy's good. Can we get that guy one day?
His little brother, Valerie.
Valerie Bure. And, of course, we're talking about, you know, Laine. I keep thinking, is it Patrick Laine, the former goaltender of the Penguins turned Blues? I kept getting Lalime.
Lalime?
Patrick Lalime.
You got to bring that name up, Dan?
I kept getting those guys mixed up. It was Patrick Lalime, Patrick Laine.
I thought it was Patrick Lane this whole time, I'll be honest with you.
Lame, yeah.
I'm watching the game, and it's like, oh, it's not Lane. Okay.
It's Lane. No, it was Laine. Sorry. Yeah. But, yeah, we'll break into that later, and we'll tell you what the Blues are doing and what they're going to be facing. As they, I think they have one more game at home here tomorrow night against the Montreal Canadiens.
Oh, man.
Before they hit the road for 4 games. But
how's Carey Price doing?
He's probably doing really good because he's Carey Price. He's the guy that the Canadiens said, we want you, we'll trade Halak.
Good move on their part.
Yeah, very good move. Even though with that previous playoffs, the Halak carried him, they still had the foresight to go, Carey Price is going to be a stud because he is a stud.
There you go.
But, getting into this holiday deal, you know, I wasn't surprised. And it was hinted at. I mean, we talked about it on Friday that the Yankees were looking at holiday. And it's a good fit because if you are the Yankees and you like to sign these veterans to, you know, 1 to 2 year deals, but while your young guys develop, this holiday deal is perfect for you. He's going to be 37, but he's coming off a season where he only played 110 games and he hit 20 home runs for the NL Central Cardinals.
Yeah,
and you know, he showed that he's got some pop. He slugged .461. It was his highest slug since 2013. The 20 home runs were his highest since 2012. He's a guy that if you put him in the right division, now he could be a DH. I can imagine him playing about 60% of his games at least as a DH for the Yankees. He'll probably play some first. He'll play some left. But here's a guy, if you put him in that AL East, he has a good chance of cranking 25 home runs. Just because if he hits 20 home runs for the, you know, for the Busch Stadium, you know, pitching able Cardinal Stadium, and he hits 20 home runs in the National League at age 36, he could probably crank 25 to 30 in that AL East. We got Baltimore, that big home run ballpark, Toronto, Boston. I can't wait to see him crank one over the monster.
Yeah.
But
I say there's no chance, Dan.
What?
I'm going to say there's no chance.
I've already made one bet. I've already bet a fellow Twitter guy, one of my most trusted guys, Pete Schmidt, that he's going to hit 30 home runs this year.
Oh, wow.
I think that, I mean, no, as far as his average getting back to where it was, I don't know. He the last couple of years of his career, he could be like a 250, 260 hitter. But I think his power, as he showed last year, even in an injury-riddled year where he hit 20 home runs in 110 games, I think if he gets 130, I think he has an easy shot of hitting 30.
Yeah.
At least, I'd say 25. I think he can hit 25 at least. Because it just comes down to where it's a hitter-friendly league, and he's also in the AL East where it's so many home runs in that division. But also he has that short porch and right in Yankee Stadium.
Also, he has to stay healthy, though, which he hasn't done very much of lately.
Yeah, but I also think I think the DH thing is going to help him, though. I think being able just to hit. I mean, Matt Holliday, he's not going to like that he's a DH, but that's going to help extend his career.
Didn't he get hit in the hand when he was batting against somebody this past season that caused him to lose time?
Really. Well, yeah, it was a freak injury. He was hit by a pitch. I mean, you know, it proves that he's not in the
But bench. It could happen if he's a DH, so you can't rule it out.
It could be, or it could be like, actually, you know, it may never break his bone again because he's privately an Avenger. But he's also got that, you know, and really, before 2015, where he suffered a pair of hamstring injuries, he was really a durable guy. But that is the one bet. As I wrote for KSDK last night, I wrote a recap of the signing, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good is that Matt Holliday is not done hitting. He smashed 20 home runs last year. He can serve as a DH. He is 2 years removed from an 8.11 OPS and 37 double season. But the bad of the deal is it is the health. In the past two seasons, he has missed 147 games due to injury when it comes to the hamstrings in 2015 and it comes to the hand last year. But I mean, it is gonna it's gonna hurt. It's also a good old father time, man. When it gets to be a 37, 38 year old player, that old father time is gonna affect an athlete. So yeah. That's the bad of it. And really the harsh of it is that Yankee faithful. Because if Matt Holliday goes through a slump, if he thinks the little, you know, criticism that he got in St. Louis is rough, he's going to face it out there in Yankee Stadium.
Did he get criticism in St. Louis?
No, I think he did. I don't think he was ever appreciated for the player that he was here, for the career that he put together over the seven seasons that he was here. I think he was a very good player. I mean, there is people constantly around St. Louis I talk to on Twitter. There was always a harping about, oh, can he do this? Can he do that? For example, he was an on-base machine for the majority of his career in St. Louis. He was a high-average on-base machine. And then he's like, people always said, well, I wish he could hit more home runs. I wish he could hit for more power. Well, last year, he hit for more power, hit more home runs, and they still weren't happy with him. So it's like, well, you want? Do you want the on-base, you know, guy? Do you want the power guy? So yeah. I don't think he ever got his due. And also, he did follow up Albert Pujols. I mean, he took over that big old number three hole in the lineup. Mm-hmm. He took over that big person, that big spot on the team after Pujols, and it was forever really compared to what Pujols was doing. Even though that's just not a fair comparison. Albert Pujols is in an area code by himself when it comes to Cardinal history and what he did. But I do think that out in New York, he's going to have to face that Big Apple rush. When it comes to, if you go through a streak, I mean, I remember Randy Johnson when he went there and pitched for the Yankees, that he just commented how harsh they were. And after pitching for Seattle and Houston, how much different it was when, you know, the heat of the East Coast media and the fan mania. I mean, it can eat a player up. It can spit him out. I mean, the first time he happens to lose his stroke, the crowd's going to let him have it. So that's something he has to look forward to. But it is a smart deal for each side. It's a one-year deal. It's low liability. If Holliday, you know, if he rakes and he has a good year, he extends his MLB time, and, you know, and he can maybe earn that last final two-year deal before he retires. It's really nothing for the luxury tax dating-friendly Yankees who, you know, spend a lot of money on their team. They hug that luxury tax every year. I mean, if he smokes a few home runs and he hits, you know, even hit 20, 25 home runs, that's a good signing for him. And if he doesn't, then, you know, it's a very low liability miss. So I do think it's a good deal for both sides. I wish Holliday luck. I hope he does well out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just glad he did.
I wish he was still here. I don't see why we couldn't have re-signed him.
You know, I do think the Cardinals are trying to get better defensively in the outfield and try to get more speed and more on, high average on base. And I think Holliday's moving into a phase of his career where he is going to be a power guy and lesser of an on base and an average guy. So, I mean, you know, 37 years old. And also, you know, you're betting on him to stay healthy. I think the Cardinals took that into account. I mean, look, if Holliday stays healthy the last 2 years and he hits well and he, you know, he plays 140 games, they may have picked up the option. But the fact that his health was declining with the hamstrings and even the broken bone in his hand, I think they just decided to kind of cut loose. And I always saw Holliday go in the American League. I never saw him finish his career here. I mean, I wanted to see it happen, but for a guy like that who's very defensively limited but who can still hit, I think that the American League is a great spot.
Yeah, something else I think you need to look at, though, is leadership. You know, they're taking a team that was already, in my opinion, lacking on leadership, and they're taking out a big part of it.
Well, I do think they still have Waino and Molina. I think that...
That leadership core is getting smaller every year.
Yeah, it is. But it's also, you have to ask guys like Carpenter and Biscotti and guys like that to step up and have a bigger role. So they're more in a transition when it comes to leadership. But I don't think leadership was a big deal. I just think the fact
that
if they could feel their position, that would have been nice.
Well, I think leadership was a huge deal.
I mean, I think it was. But, I mean, Holliday was there the whole year. And I think Waino was there. Molina was there. I think it was just execution of baseball fundamentals. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, not giving away so many runs, playing better defense. I mean, if we don't give away so many runs, we're probably in the playoffs. I mean, it's that close. But
that's a good call.
I mean, but you never know. This year is going to be a big deal because you got Molina's 1 year older. Can Wainwright bounce back from last year?
Yeah,
you do have, and this is something that Hayward said, is that, you know, the aging core. You do have the Cardinals going through, and really last year as Corey Rudd, the Rucourt scribe, who came in here and guest hosted Daybreak Dose.
I remember Corey.
Yeah, Corey came in, and he was the first one to really say that was kind of a mini rebuild last year. Was you had the Cardinals kind of changing out things, bringing in new guys, giving your guys a bigger role, like Diaz and Biscotti. But now this year, it's kind of like 1 year later, and now
it's still going to be a rebuild year.
It's still going to be a rebuild year, but I think the Cardinals, I think I said it on Thursday, Matt, were primed to do something big this week. Yeah. I think Mozeliak's planning something big. I don't ask me to give you evidence. I can just smell it.
Well, you.
I mean,
you need quality prospects to pull off something big, and outside of Reyes. Is there Carlos Martinez and Reyes?
The Cardinals have them. The Cardinals, I mean,
who? Like top line prospects that are going to get an actual legit something in return.
Harrison Bader is a big time prospect.
By himself, he ain't going to bring back anything.
Well, no, he's not. But you also got Austin Gomber, who is also ranked on across the MLB draft, MLB prospects as far as one of the highest prospects in the division. Luke Weaver is very, Jack Flaherty. There's a lot of guys, a lot of pitching in there that the Cardinals could trade. I mean, I don't think they can pull off a Blackman type thing or a Pollock, but they can definitely bring in somebody that's good. They have prospects to make kind of a deal. Like, you know, I was looking at yesterday, fellow station board op and voice, Brendan Schaefer of KMOV, he put in there a poll up about getting Adam Eaton. And Adam Eaton's a guy that he can't play center field, but he could play a great left field, and he would make your outfield better by giving Grichuk a better left fielder. You have Piscotty and right, so he's a guy the Cardinals could get.
Yeah.
He's got a contract that runs for 4 more years. He can hit. He's a high on base, high average guy, and I think he could be a Gold Glove left fielder. Yeah. So that's one way.
I think he's a highly average outfielder, though. I don't find the excitement in Adam Eaton at all.
He's a very good. He's won a Gold Glove in the outfield. It was in right, but he's a good corner outfielder. He's not a good center fielder, but as Derek Gould told the line change on Thursday, the Cardinals aren't looking for just a center fielder, looking for an outfielder. Because Grichuk can grow into that position. I mean, stat-wise, defensive runs saved-wise, Grichuk was a decent center fielder, and he's still young. That was still only his second full year of playing the outfield. So they could get a left fielder like Eaton, who could play left field very well, play a lot better than Moss and Holiday could, and it can make for a better outfield. So they can go that direction, or they can go for a guy like, there's even guys like, there was a guy last night who's been talked about, a Toronto Blue Jay, a young 23-year-old player, Pompey, a guy who is 23 years old, played parts the last two seasons. He's kind of defensive-minded. You can go for that. I mean, and of course, you can go for the whole bonanza, man. Go for Justin Turner at third base and then Jared Dyson in the outfield. I just think that something big's going to happen.
If I think something big's going to happen, it's got to be bigger than that. That's not big to me.
But still,
Justin Turner will be.
Well, Turner's one of the top free agents in the market. The bad thing about Justin Turner,
doesn't mean much to me.
Well, I mean, as far as he's coming off a great year, he plays a great third base. He's got a big bat. But
he's over 30.
Yeah, he is. A lot of these guys are over 30.
Right.
I mean, except for guys like Eaton and Pollock, they're all over 30. Kiermaier, even though I don't think Kiermaier is going to leave Tampa.
Well, I think Justin Turner's a guy to spend money on, but I don't think he's an attractive piece at all.
In all honesty, I do think Justin Turner would upgrade your infield defense a lot, and he would upgrade your lineup. It just depends on how many years he's going to want. He's coming off two great years where he had over a 6 WAR. A lot of, home runs, great third base play. He saved the Dodgers a lot of runs over there.
Yeah.
But I just think that at the term is going to scare off Mozeliak. But I do think you bring in Eaton, that makes your outfield great. I mean, you put Eaton in left field, Piscotty in right, Grichuk in center. That's a great thing. You can put Eaton at top of the lineup. He's got a .365 on base percentage. He hits a ton of doubles, a ton of triples.
Yeah.
He's a guy and he's under control until 2020. He has options that run through 2021. So it is like you're getting like a rental, like my guy, who's Lorenzo Cain, who I think makes your outfield defensively elite.
Right.
So there's a lot of options out there. I just think that he's going to do something. I mean, it may not be Mike Trout, which is going to let down on half a Cardinal Nation. But, I think that he's going to do something. I think now that the new CBA is in there, and now that he's kind of got the parts rolling, Jaime's gone. He still has trade chips, I think, in Waka and Matt Adams. Adams and even a Marco Gonzalez. Those guys are all trade chips.
How much value do you think Waka has at this point? Because I don't think the league looks at him as a starting pitcher anymore.
Well, they can. And here's the thing that I'll say about Waka is that he could be the ultimate weapon for a team. He could be a guy that starts like 15 to 20 games and then comes out of the bullpen as a late inning guy. He could be kind of like that sixth man in the rotation. And also, yeah. Teams always bet on youth. He's only 25 years old. He's still very young. I don't think he's going to be a durable 33-start-a-year starter, but I do think teams are going, you know, that guy can probably start 15 to 20 games, and then we can bring somebody younger up, and then we can put him in the bullpen, and he could be a late-inning smoker.
I mean, yeah, but how much is that worth?
I do think,
you know, what's going to come back in a trade on a guy like that?
For example, if you wanted to get a guy like if you want to get into that AJ Powell conversation, you could package Waka and then a bat and then an Adams and then a really good prospect. You can probably give him Bader, Adams, and Waka for a guy like Powell who would make your outfield elite.
Yeah.
So I do think Waka is going to be a component unless it comes to something smaller, because I do know there were reports via Mark Saxon, the ESPN Cardinals reporter, that he said that, you know, when they tried to offer Waka for Marcelo Ozuna straight up in Miami, Miami didn't want to do it. So that tells you right there he's going to be a component, but I do think that teams value him. And I think even a guy like Matt Adams, a guy who had 17 home runs in a partial season last year, who can go to a place in a hitter-friendly, like you send Matt Adams to the AL East, he could probably crank 25 or 30 home runs out there.
And then who do we have to cover first base on the bench?
Well, Matt Carpenter can play first base.
Well, yeah, but coming off the bench, who's going to be our backup first
baseman?
Johnny
Peralta can play
first base.
Who's
going to hit 17 home runs off the bench like Matt Adams is going to?
Well, I think Matt Adams is a guy that it's never going to be the player that we want him to be, and he's still got
value. That's clear, but I'm not even really concerned about his trade value. I'm just concerned about if we trade him, who takes his spot. Because as much as I'm not very high on Matt Adams, I do understand that he brings a lot to the table as far as
I don't think
what he can provide off the bench, especially.
I don't think you ever worry about what a guy at the bench can provide if he can bring you something really good in a trade. I think if Adams still has
trade value. As long as there's
value,
a Ty Wigginton to sign or something.
Well, yeah, there's always a Ty Wigginton, and you're gonna have to eat that contract. But that's
right, and that's my point. You know, yeah, you can lose a bench piece and then say, oh, well, we'll just sign a guy, and it turns out to be a Ty Wigginton 2.0 kind of situation. Then where are you? Yeah, you're in trouble.
That's
looking for a bench bat.
That's basically like one of the few aberrations of Mazzeo, as far as having to really get nothing from a guy, though. I mean, you can't go, we're not going to make a deal because we don't have Matt Adams hitting home runs off the bench. Matt Adams is a limited talent that's proven that he can't be an everyday player. Another team may see him as an everyday player,
right?
And I think that gives him value that's expiring now too.
Right. Well, that's why I was asking who takes that spot, because if he goes, then somebody's got to take that role.
Well, yeah, obviously you can get a third baseman then put Johnny Peralta over there to play. So Yadier Molina could play some first base, take some pressure off his knees, get Carson Kelly some more starts.
Yeah,
he can easily find a guy that could back up first base. I mean, if you have a chance to get a position changing or really a game changing third baseman or a center fielder or a left fielder, I think you take that chance. I don't think Adams has
Who are you considering game changing at this point?
Well, I mean, I would think Lorenzo Cain would change your whole team as far as defensive runs saved in the outfield. You move Grichuk to left field, that would make your outfield elite. As far as Grichuk in left field, Piscotty in right, Cain in center. I mean, if you get a guy like Adam Beaton, he gives you a high average, high on base percentage guy. AJ Pollock, if you can get him, he's probably one of the cream of the crop. I mean, Kevin Kiermaier is probably the best defensive outfielder available. So you have guys like that. Justin Turner, as I said, for all the scare over his term, he is, as far as third base and the way he would change the Cardinals' defense, he is a big-time guy. It's just you got to give him 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
But, we're going to see. I think Mo's going to have something up his sleeve this year. Up this week. I think this is going to be a big week for activity now that the CBA is done.
Well, I read on Twitter.
A lot of stuff going on.
I read on Twitter somebody said something about how the Cardinals are a sleeper team at the winter meetings here this year.
They are. And I really do think that, because people are expecting Mazzeo to kind of wait. I mean, last year, he missed out on Hayward. You know, the Cubs, he went to the Cubs. He missed out on Price. He went to the Red Sox. I think the Mazzeocs, I think he's learned a few things. And he saw it on a smaller scale with Cecil. He was a really sought-after guy in the market from where all the MLB Network really reported that other teams really wanted him.
Right.
And in order for Mazzeo to get him, he gave – Cecil that fourth year, and that shows you that he's a little more aggressive this year.
And a no-trade clause.
I know. Well, that's what it took. I mean, he was the top lefty on the market behind Chapman. I mean,
right.
As far as sought after, as far as the guy who was just on, you know, an AL playoff team in the Blue Jays and really a big arm, I mean, ever since he's really converted to a reliever. So I think that shows that Mozeliak is going to not wait around, that he's going to go, okay, this guy, if I have to do this to get this guy, he's going to do it. So I think it's going to be a big year at the winter meetings here in Washington, D.C. this week as all the GMs converge and probably start making some deals now that the CBA is announced. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to review the box office and talk a little bit more about maybe some holiday films, the road ahead for films, and also maybe some celebrity birthdays. I'm always curious of who turned what today in the world of film here on the Southwest Diner Daybreak Dose, streaming live on InsideSTL.com.